Welcome back to the Bob Davis Podcast. In podcast 764, well, we're going to have to talk about the appointment of Brett Kavanaugh to the Supreme Court and conventional wisdom, and really whether or not this is going to have an effect on the midterms. I've done a whole series of podcasts on the midterms, and this weekend I got fired up because there are some things about conventional wisdom and predictions, once again, that I have to talk about. So we're going to hose that down in podcast 764. Look, I don't drink the tap water in my town. I drink bottled water, and I'll tell you why. I don't like the way it tastes first, but then you get into the possible levels of pollution from decades ago. Toxins that are odorless, tasteless, and colorless, regardless of how the water tastes, and they are putting stuff in the water so it doesn't kill us that, you know, could be worse than what was in there to begin with, right? So I spend a lot of money on bottled water, too much, and I buy two or three cases at a time, have to lug it in here, and there is a solution to this. So my friend Joe Berg at Water Butler was telling me the other day that he can make my tap water pure and better tasting, to the extent that it is more pure and better tasting than bottled water. And that is great, and it's, you know, a fraction of the cost in the long run. Now, the fact is it's affordable, so they can put a water purification system into your house, whether you want to put it in the basement that covers all the water or under your sink just for the tap water in your sink, and it will end your dependence on bottled water forever, and it's pure, and it's safe, and it tastes great. 763-286-8328. If you live in St. Louis Park, Rogers, Maple Grove, Edina, Plymouth, or Minnetonka, well, you know why I say this, right? It is time to purify your water right from the source with the Water Butler. Call Joe Berg, 68 years of experience with plumbing, 30 years of experience with water filtration systems, 763-286-8328, 763-286-8328, or click on the banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. End your dependence on bottled water forever today. By the way, I hate my printer because I hate paying for print cartridges because they are so expensive at the big box retailers. And so I found Cartridge World in Maple Grove because they, Cartridge World, can save me up to 30% compared to the big box stores. And Cartridge World cartridges are guaranteed to perform as good as new. So they got free delivery and qualifying quotes. Cartridge World in Maple Grove off of Weaver Lake Road between Dairy Queen and Subway, 763-420-6632. Ask for Jason or click on that beautiful Cartridge World banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. So right now, I am clearing off the hard drive on my computer, and so I have to use... I was going to come down here and print a bunch of these polls up, and I'm not going to be able to do that because I have filled my computer up with so much data that I'm going to have to just let that go. But I'm fired up enough that I really don't need all that data, and I'm not sure that I even need notes to talk about this. As you know, I did a bunch of different podcasts and on two different things. First of all, I did a series of 9 podcasts on the toss-up races as a baseline at the beginning of September, late August, so a month ago. And I had went through all of the so-called 42 House toss-up races and the governor toss-up races and the Senate toss-up races. And when I say races, I mean all of these separate elections that are taking place across the country for the U.S. House of Representatives, for governors, and for senators. There's also elections for state representatives in a lot of states, and that's just way too complex to try to add any podcasts about state legislatures to the series. I'll let that go, and I will talk about the state legislature where I live on election night, and I will talk about a lot of these elections, whether it's for House or Senate or whatever, most of them, when election night rolls around, because I have reached the point now where you have to look for a result before you seek to comment on an issue. Now, the vote for Brett Kavanaugh in the Senate to confirm him to be on the U.S. Supreme Court, and he was sworn in shortly thereafter, is an outcome that you can then say, okay, something has happened. Now we can say, is this going to have an effect on the midterms or something? And I'm going to talk about in this podcast. But I've already even possibly forgotten some of those key House races because there's so many of them. I do not think that there are as many toss-up races as these people at Real Clear Politics and Charlie Cook and Larry Sabato and a lot of these other people are saying, because my sense is that if you say, and I said this in almost all of those podcasts, so I hate to belabor the point, but if you say that the outcome of the election is in question and it could be a Democrat wave, or there are so many super close toss-up races we can't possibly predict the outcome, that keeps people watching. And if you're a political scientist, it keeps people asking you to come to their conference and speak, or it keeps people asking you to be on the show. It keeps you in the public eye. And today, that is what it's all about. Everybody wants to be on Fox News or CNN. Everybody wants to be a talking head. Everybody wants to be the expert that everyone refers to say, here's what's going on. And that's upsetting to me, because that's not really – political scientists, if they're good, really aren't about predicting. I suppose if you hire some political scientist as a campaign, if you're running a presidential campaign, you want to know what the lay of the land is and you want them to tell you what the possibilities are. But political scientists aren't pollsters. Political scientists sift through the existing data in existing boundaries for elections and report to their clients or to their students. They study the outcome of these elections and they talk about potential impacts. And they, the ones I've known are loath to make predictions about what's going to happen or what isn't going to happen. It's just, you have to look for this and you have to look for that. And this is what happened last time and this is what happened over the last 10 years. And so there's statistics to it, but they are concerned with election data, usually after the fact. That's when they really get busy. Pollsters, on the other hand, are people who seek to do market research of one kind or another to answer market questions. You know, do people like the big iPhones? And if they do, why? Which demographics like it the most? Why do they want big iPhones? Why don't they want smaller phones? Or do you buy the cheeses at the local supermarket? Do you like premium cheeses, or do you like just basically Kraft cheddar cheese that you put on a hamburger? What do you use cheese for? Because our client wants to know what people are looking for when they go to the store and they want to buy premium cheeses. Do you drink wine? You know, do you want to eat the cheese with wine? Do you eat nuts? Do you want to eat the cheese with nuts and so forth? Those are the kinds of concrete questions that market research seeks to answer. The other thing is that today, with data collection, with data mining, companies have the capability to answer more deeper questions about demographics and about psychographics, which is, you know, psychology-based demographics, basically, and sociographics, which is sociologically based. So income data and, gender data and regional differences and things of that nature. And so there are all sorts of data that you can pull to look at things and make decisions about what you are going to do with the product that you're selling. Elections, I maintain, are not that easy because people I don't want to say they're very serious about their politics. I guess I would say that people are very cagey about describing what they think about a particular candidate, or they don't know what they think about a particular candidate, or they don't know much about an issue that they're concerned about or that they think that they're going to vote on or not. And asking them what they're going to do is problematic because generally voters don't know what they're going to do until they walk into the booth. Certainly the party line people, the party reptiles, whether they're Democrat or Republican, they knew what they're going to do. Before they can tell you the day after the election what they're going to do for the next election. They don't care who's running because they're going to vote a straight Republican ticket or a straight Democrat ticket, or they hate Democrats or they hate Republicans or whatever it is. Those people, you know what they're going to do and they can tell you what they're going to do. They still can't tell you much about why. We have focused in this country a huge amount of energy and interest in people who don't know whether they're going to vote and on people who don't know who they're going to vote for. And that allows these people to create a backdrop where they can say, anything could happen. The power base of the country is going to shift. This is going to happen. That's going to happen. And this is what you should think about this, and this is what you should think about that. I think that is an impossible thing to do. We already saw what happens when those kinds of predictions take place in a presidential election, and the outcome is different because they did not. And I said this in another podcast, and I'm repeating myself, but I don't think the media did a very good job explaining to people what the Electoral College is, why it exists, and what it does. And so people didn't understand the differences between some states where electors are free to vote who they want and others who are slaved to the popular vote in their state. And they really, most people that I know that are uninformed really cannot figure out the difference between the popular vote in the United States and the Electoral College vote. And some of them are very famous, quote unquote, political analysts who just can't understand what the point of the Electoral College is. I don't have time to get into it, but it's a fact of political life when it comes to presidential politics. Obviously, in the midterm elections, we don't mess around with the Electoral College. But I bring it up to point out how unpredictable and how conventional wisdom can't predict elections. So the confirmation of Brett Kavanaugh has now spawned any number of new commentaries from all sorts of people and all sorts of the political spectrum that there's going to be a huge backlash, either Republican or Democrat, because either it was a miscalculation or nominating and then confirming Kavanaugh is a terrible thing, and Democrats are going to go out into the polls in droves and they're going to punish the Republicans for doing this. Well, you could certainly say that. What I would say at this point is, well, how would you know? How do you find the evidence that says that there's been movement? So I'm gonna do a couple of things. First of all, I want to talk about wave elections, and second of all, I want to talk about who elections belong to in this country. And I don't care if it's for the House of Representatives or for the Senate or your local legislature, you know, and legislative districts for state legislatures are notoriously smaller. And, you know, I don't need to go into that. Or the president. Elections belong to the people who show up. Elections belong to the people who actually vote. And so when you hear people talking about wave elections and when you hear people talking about unpredictable things and close races, I don't like that we have them. We call them races because, again, it makes it sound like a marathon or something. I don't like the sportsification and the coverage of politics like sports because it's an art. It's not a science and it's not a sport. It's an art. There's a thing called the art of politics, and the real good practitioners of the art of politics know that it's an art because you're dealing with very private, very closely held views about national affairs by voters. Most of the time, they don't even know how they feel. And many, many people simply don't vote. We have pretty high participation rates in elections in this country, but off-year elections or so-called midterms are notoriously low in voter turnout, no matter what the mainstream media does and no matter how things are covered and no matter how much television rich guys purchase and no matter how campaigns are run most of the time. Voter turnout in midterms is low. So if you're running for Congress in a midterm year, then you need to focus virtually everything on voter turnout, not on putting up signs, not on having coffees, unless they are going to result in making sure that people either, you know, fill out absentee ballots sooner or give you telephone numbers so that you can send people out to get them to the polls. And a good congressional candidate has to have a really first-class get-out-the-vote campaign, especially for midterms, because midterms are notoriously low in voter turnout. And so we have a situation where The media is screaming and yelling and pounding about all these different things that are supposedly affecting quote-unquote voters. And so, yeah, there are people out there that have various opinions about Brett Kavanaugh. And I don't even care either way. I don't even care about, what's her name, Mrs. Ford or Miss Ford or whatever she was, is, now, then, or anything else. Don't care what she said. Don't believe any of them. Don't believe him. Don't believe her, period. That's my personal opinion about the whole thing. It's all, it is all a big show to fire up voters. That's, this whole thing has been a show. And I will leave it to you to figure out whether you think this was a Republican October surprise or a Democrat October surprise. That is, you know, coming up with some crazy thing that happens right before the election in October to drive voters to choose a candidate or to choose a political party. So when you hear these reports about how people are going to do this and people are going to do that, and they're all upset about Brett Kavanaugh, and because of that, they're going to go do this and they're going to do that, they have no idea whether that's what they're going to do. A, they have no idea whether these things have had that effect on people who are actually going to vote, number one. And number two, as far as people voting, the turnout will not be as high as for a presidential election. In some places it will, but for the most part, the turnout for this election, no matter what they do, is going to be lower than it is for a presidential year, because people just are not interested. They don't know who their congressman is. I can't tell you how many times somebody would call up and bitch and moan about some congressman on the radio show, and I'd say, bitch and moan about something national. Somebody needs to do something. And I'd say, who's your congressman? Dead air. Who? What? Who's your congressman? Amy Klobuchar. No, that's your senator from, if you're from Minnesota. I guess I don't know. So you don't know who your congressman is, or they'd give you the name of the governor, or they'd give you the name of a state senator. They don't know who their congressman is. So here we have all these people telling us that because Brett Kavanaugh got nominated and appointed to the court, there's going to be a huge backlash and all these terrible things are going to happen, and Republicans are going to be turned out of office. And or Democrats are going to be turned out of office because people are furious. And you can say this has affected public opinion a certain way, but you can't say it has affected voters one way or another. And I'm going to talk about that a little bit. Well, you know, politics is a commodity. Politicians are commodities. Everything these days is a commodity, whether it's gasoline, where you don't have a brand loyalty to a gasoline station for the most part, coffee stores, whatever. When was the last time you bought something, whether it's a service or a product, and you thought to yourself, God, I wish I'd have known about this 10 years ago? And yet that is the most important thing when it comes to things that are important to us. So in this case, I'm talking about jewelry, whether it's a wedding ring, your great-grandfather's watch, your Rolex, or the diamonds in your wife's diamond ring from the wedding 30 years ago that are starting to fall out. And you wonder about, and she wonders about, whether or not they're secure. So we're coming up on birthday seasons, and we're coming up on Christmas, and I'm going to tell you about Johannken Jewelers, because they do amazing work. First of all, they have a huge collection of watches, antique watches, and they can be fixed to look and work perfectly. So for things that are dear, you want a jeweler that you can trust, and that is Johannken Jewelers in Crystal, Minnesota, in the Crystal Shopping Center, in the same family since 1886. They're not a chain. Johannken's, local family, like the things that are important to us all. Johannken's known for rebuilding and repairing crowns and settings to perfection. I've seen some of the work. They really are into it, and they do amazing work. Diamonds and gemstones and all jewelry repairs. They also have new watches. They can repair and service your Rolex and all that stuff, restoration and services for watches. And they do have this amazing collection of vintage wristwatches and timepieces that you have to see to believe. Check out johannkenjewelers.net. Lots of great advice and information and content there at johannkens.net. Johannken's in the Crystal Shopping Centers at 115 Willow Bend in Crystal. You can just call them at 763-537-7233, or once again, 763-537-7233, or click on the fabulous, elegant Johannken Jewelers banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. Remember, Elections belong to people who show up to vote. So the party that gets people to vote, the candidate that gets their people to vote, is the candidate that's going to win. If they outnumber the opposing candidate's voters, they will win the election. In districts, congressional districts, which are not gerrymandered, and most districts in the United States are gerrymandered. So most districts in California are 80+% Democrat districts. Most districts in Texas are 60 or 70% or 80% Republican. And in the middle, there are 43 or 44 or 45 congressional districts out of 450 House districts that are places where they have what they call competitive races. Now, if I've heard it once, I've heard it 100 times from stupid candidates and from stupid Republicans. If we could just get Democrats to vote for us, and Democrats say the same thing, if we could just get some of these Republicans to vote for us, we could win all these elections where they are close. So in the non-gerrymandered districts, for the most part, every House race is close. In statewide races, when we're talking about senators or governors, they are always close. And when I say close, they come down within 5 or 6 points of each other, unless it's a blowout. And you will know if it's going to be a blowout, usually well before the fact. Are there surprises? Absolutely. Do people stumble? Do they make mistakes? Does it turn out that they did this thing or that thing? Yes. But just to give you an example, there's a congressman in Tennessee named Scott Desjarlais, who was a notorious person who was a pro-life, against abortion guy, and had served many terms in the House, a doctor. And then it came out that Scott Desjarlais, apparently, I hope I've got this right, so my apologies to the Desjarlais people if I'm wrong, had an affair and made the person get an abortion, or suggested that she get an abortion. And everybody said, oh, he's done. That's it. He's toast. And the Democrats said, he's toast. And everything else. Well, Scott Desjarlais won his House election last time by, I don't know, a couple of hundred votes or something. And that goes to show you. Another one is Duncan Hunter is under federal indictment. And everybody said, oh, Duncan Hunter's done. He's out. Duncan Hunter is up by 9 points in his district, because his district in the California Valley is a very Republican district. And I told you guys this when I went through these races, and I said, in these places where it's generally a Republican area, if it's close and the other side wins, it's generally because of some personal issue, it's generally because of some political issue, or because the defending candidate or incumbent just wasn't very good to begin with. I'm not saying that it's all easy to say what's going to happen, but it's irritating to me because we get these people running out and saying, oh, it looks like it's going to be a blue wave. What's a wave election? A wave election is when things shift significantly. And we didn't have wave elections very often in history. So the last wave election was in 2010, I think, it was 2010. I can't remember which, but we had when the Republicans swept the House. So that would have been, 2010. So Barack Obama was elected in 2008. And surprise, surprise, they passed Obamacare, and I think it was in the election of 2010, there was a wave of shifts because of the ACA, of people electing governors, electing Republicans to their House districts. And it was enough seats that they referred to it as a wave, and it caused a shift in leadership in the House, right? So before that, the previous wave had been like, I don't even remember. There was one in the 60s, and there was one in like 1876. Those were the previous waves. And now that they had a wave in recent history, these guys are going to run out and tell you that every time there's a midterm, it's going to be a wave election. And for the record, I missed the 2010 wave because I didn't believe them. I didn't believe people when they said it was going to be a Republican wave, because my experience with Republicans is they don't get off their ass and vote. So I just didn't believe it, and I guess I underestimated the number of people who were upset about the Affordable Care Act. So they're saying now, because of Brett Kavanaugh and everyone believes Christine Ford, that there's going to be a wave election. They've been saying this from the get-go, that there was going to be a wave election because everyone hates Trump. And yet, the man, and I'm, you know, I have my issues with Trump. I'm not supporting Trump, but I'm saying he's going out and he is filling auditoriums all over the country with this roadshow that he's doing. And everyone seems to be ignoring the fact that he seems and appears to be in his place, in the areas where he did well, he appears to be fairly popular. Now, I'm going to go on my phone because the computer upstairs is, I'm, you know, moving files and it's taking forever. So you got to give me a break here. But I check Real Clear Politics every day and I check polls because I want to keep track of what's going on. And we have heard a number of things that are utter, in my opinion, utter nonsense. And I'm going to tell you why, because I want to give you some reasons why I'm doing this. And the main takeaway is nobody can tell you what effect Brett Kavanaugh's nomination and, elevation to the court is going to have on the vote. Nobody. And so running around and saying this is going to happen and that's going to happen doesn't make any sense to me. My suspicion is that in suburban areas where the women are relatively liberal, they're probably incensed at what happened, but then I wouldn't know, so I'm not going to say. And in the conservative areas where the women are, you know, conservative, they're probably incensed at the Democrats for doing what they did. I don't know who the winner or loser in that equation is, and we won't know until election night or sometime thereafter, because just because that happened, you can't say, oh, all the people that were mad about so-and-so came out and voted. You have to look at the individual races to determine. But there's a number of polls that have come out in the last week or so, and the races, predictably, are tightening, and they are not necessarily tightening in favor of Democrats. But watch out, because the media is going to say that they are. And let's talk about the first one, Florida, where Rick Scott has been up pretty much, and the incumbent, Nelson, who is a Democrat, has now eclipsed Rick Scott and is up by 2.4. Well, guess what? So if I click on Florida and I go look at this poll, there's been 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 polls in Florida going back to the mid-September. Nelson has been in the lead in every single one of them. Before that, if you looked at all the polls, all the Florida Senate polls, Scott has been up back at the early part of September, and he was up considerably in July and August. At the beginning, Nelson was up. There was a Gravis poll back in April, and Nelson was up 28 points. So this race has tightened. Well, guess what? A 2.4% spread is well within the margin of error. And the last poll, Nelson has been up by one. So the last two polls, the WCTV poll and the Mason-Dixon poll from the from September 17th through the 30th and from the 24th through the 27th of September, Nelson was up by one. That race is too close to call. And I would say if you're a Democrat in Florida and you're not well above your competitor, you've got a problem. Now, Nelson is the incumbent. He could win that race again. He is, I would say, I'm not going to say that. I was going to say something about him being moderate, but I'm just going to say it's Florida. So the southern part of Florida is notoriously unpredictable and potentially Democrat, and the northern part of Florida and the western part of Florida is Republican. It just depends on who votes, where they come out from, and everything else. So keep in mind, you know, during the summer in Florida, September and so forth, you got a lot of snowbirds. So they're not in Florida to be surveyed. When do they go back to Florida? Do they vote in Florida or do they vote in Illinois or someplace like that? So Nelson's up by two and actually up by consistently one. The only reason they've got him up by two is because he popped in the Quinnipiac poll back in early mid-September. Up 7 points in that poll. So that's the only reason that it's a more than two-point spread. That is within the margin of error. That is a tied race. In other words, an equal number of people are for Nelson as they are for Scott. Scott is a former governor, fairly popular. I wouldn't say that that is going to be a Democrat victory. So then we go to Tennessee. Now, in Tennessee, we have been hearing for months, oh, you know, Marsha Blackburn, who is a congresswoman who's now running for the Senate because of a retirement of whoever the senator was there that didn't like Trump. I forgot his name. He was the mayor of, I want to say it's John Cornyn, but that's the guy from Texas. This is whatever his name is. So Marsha Blackburn is a successful congresswoman. She's a several-term congresswoman. And Phil Bredesen is a former governor, really seemingly nice guy, and fairly popular in the state. And all I have heard about for months is that Tennessee, Bredesen's going to win the Tennessee Senate. That's going to be a pickup for Democrats. Well, guess what? The last two polls, a Fox News poll and a CBS YouGov poll, have Blackburn up by 5 and 8, and they were taken in the first week of October, and this last one was taken ending the 5th, which was Friday, at the peak of this whole thing with, what's his name, Brett Kavanaugh. So the RCP average, so the average of all these polls, and the recent polls, the polls back in September had Bredesen up by 5. He is up, she is up by 2 points. So again, this one is too close to call. She's up by less than, down in Florida is up by. It's a neck and neck race, but the Republicans are up. So where are we getting that Phil Bredesen is going to, you know, blow her out of the water and it's going to be a pickup for the Democrats? Could it be a pickup? Yes, it could. It's a very close race. If I'm Blackburn, I would prefer a much bigger cushion there. Everybody's talking about this Donnelly guy in Indiana. He's in trouble. You know, it's going to be a Republican pickup in Indiana. There have been two polls taken in Indiana. All right. Well, here we have all Indiana Senate polls. So the two polls recently taken in Indiana. Yeah, there's only been 1, 2, 3 polls. Two of them are Fox News and one's an NBC Marist poll. Okay. And, if I had my computer, I could tell you what the sample sizes are, but it doesn't matter. So Braun, who is the challenger there, the Republican, was up by 2 in the early part of September. Donnelly is up by 2 in the last poll, which ended on the 2nd of October. That is not outside. In other words, that's well within the margin of error. That is a 50-50 race right there. And it's Indiana. So Joe Donnelly has had a lot of problems. Doesn't mean he's going to lose. But what I'm trying to tell you is that anybody that says that's going to be a Democrat pickup is reading tea leaves. They have no idea if that's going to be a Democrat pickup. It could, or a Democrat hold. It could be a Republican pickup. It's hard to tell what's going to happen. So again, that's something that they can't say. Every time I hear this stuff, and now I'm going on longer than I want to, it just pisses me off. Because every time I hear this stuff, I go in and look at these polls. And I had a conversation with a friend on Friday night. Well, the polls didn't know. They said Hillary was going to win. The polls never said that. How many times do I have to say that? The polls never said Hillary Clinton was going to win the presidency. They said it was going to be a close race. And particularly if you looked at polls in Ohio and Florida and Pennsylvania and Georgia and Wisconsin and Michigan, you could see that she did not have much of an advantage. And in fact, it was a tied race and that Donald Trump could win the presidency. And he did, because it's an electoral college vote. But that didn't stop all of those idiots on television telling people that she was going to win. And Democrats believed her because they wanted to believe her. And if you're a Republican and you want to believe that Republicans are going to be so pissed off about how Brett Kavanaugh was treated that they're going to come out in droves to vote Republican, well, good luck, because they may or may not. And so the Indiana Senate might be a hold. The Tennessee Senate may be a hold for Republicans. The Florida Senate may be a hold for Democrats, or it could be a pickup for Republicans if Rick Scott pulls through. And then we come to Missouri, where a lot of attention has been focused by the president on Claire McCaskill, who is the incumbent Democrat in that state. So Missouri, let's talk about Missouri. Everybody thinks Missouri is a Republican state. Well, there's a bunch of kids. They're all conservative in Missouri. No, they're not. And Missouri is famously moves Democrat and Republican, and the Democrats there are fairly moderate, and the Republicans there are fairly moderate. Go back and look at all the governors they've had. They've had Republican and Democrat governors. I would compare Missouri more to the way Illinois was 40 years ago than I would compare Missouri to Texas, let's say. But okay, fine. So there's all this attention focused on McCaskill. And there have been 4 or 5 recent polls taken in September. One of them, CBS poll, has them tied. One of them has Hawley, who is the Republican challenger to Claire McCaskill, up by 3. Another one has Hawley up by 2. CNN's poll has McCaskill up by 3, and Fox News has them tied. So it's Hawley by 0.4. That's an impossible race to call. You can't say who's going to win that race because it's too close. It's too close. Could the Republican win it? Yes. Claire McCaskill could lose, and that could be a pickup for the Republicans, right? And they don't say that. They say Claire McCaskill's in trouble, and it looks like the Republicans are going to win that race. Well, they have there's no reason for them to say that. I'm drinking a sip of coffee because I'm upsetting myself so much. I'm yelling. I'm sorry. I don't mean to, but this kind of inaccuracy drives me crazy. So let's talk about Arizona real quick. And I'm not going to go through all these. I'm just going to go through the most important ones. I'm not going to talk about Menendez. You know, I'm not going to talk about Joe Manchin or Tammy Baldwin or any of those people, or even Tina Smith, because they're outside the margins of error, right? So everyone's talking about the path to taking over the Senate for the Democrats goes through Arizona. And I don't know why they say that other than they've got it already figured out that Hawley's going to win. And that, you know what I'm saying? It's like we've already announced that if they can, all they have to do is win 2 seats and it's going to be, Arizona. So let's talk about Arizona, where just recently, very quickly, they've had 5 or 6 polls recently and a number of polls before this. There's been a lot of polling in Arizona. McSally, who is a congressman, same situation as wherever it was where I was talking about the congressman that's running Tennessee. So this is a similar situation in Tennessee. McSally was up in only 2 of those polls. Sinema has been up by as much as 11 points. The race is tightening down toward the end, and Sinema is up by 3. But the last 2 polls, one of them she's up by 2, and the other one she's up by 3, and those were taken right before the confirmation vote. So Arizona is not a liberal state. Yes, Phoenix is liberal, and parts of Phoenix are liberal, but not like Minnesota. So when people say, Arizona has gone liberal, a lot of Republican senators and governors in Arizona. Yes, they've had Democrat governors. Yes, they've had Democrat legislatures and so forth and so on. But Arizona is a relatively secure Republican state. This is Jeff Flake's seat. He is retiring. So this is why it's close. So it's an open seat. And McSally's an Air Force veteran. Sinema is very popular in, North Phoenix and places like that and urban areas and Tucson. But that doesn't mean that she's got this. So this one is too close to call. It's well within the margins of error. And people running around saying the path to the Senate it goes through Arizona, well, that's just silliness. Let's wait and see what happens on election night if she wins. But you can't call that right now. I mean, I can tell you that there were states that Hillary Clinton was up by 3 in, which is why these idiots said she was going to win the presidency, and she didn't win. Why? Because they're within the margin of error. It could be – she could be up by 3 or down by 6. That's how far – that's how much give there is in these polls. In Nevada, Jackie Rosen's up by 2. Everybody's talking of Dean Heller's finished, blah, 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 blah. Couldn't tell you how that's going to come out, but 2 points is, again, that's a race that's too close to call. What else is there? Oh, yeah, my favorite is the Ted Cruz situation. Oh, Beto O'Rourke is just killing it. He's just, oh my God, he's huge. All we hear about is Beto O'Rourke and what an amazing candidate Beto O'Rourke is. And geez, Texas is going to go and Cruz is going to lose because he's this oily, creepy guy, blah, 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 blah. He's up by 5 in Texas. And that is getting close to out of the margin of error. So Ted Cruz, who has been struggling and fighting and campaigning like crazy and running lots of TV, in fact, the reason he's up by 5 is that in the Quinnipiac poll from 9/11 to 9/17 and the CBS YouGov poll from 10/2 to 10/5, he was up by 9 in one and up by 6 in another, and he's been in the lead in all of the races since. So all of these little polls, the last 4 or 5 recent polls dating back to August, Cruz has been in the lead. Is that still a toss-up? Especially in Texas. So when you hear them say that, you know, don't buy it. Finally, I'm not going to even mention North Dakota, where Kramer is up by 8 over Heidi Heitkamp, who's in serious trouble. That one is out of the order of, standard deviation or whatever, margin of error. So it looks like that's going to be a pickup for the Republicans. So right here, I see at least one pickup for the Republicans, and I see a possibility of two or three pickups for the Republicans. If they pick them up, is it because of Brett Kavanaugh? Hard to tell. But I go through these, then you go through and you look at the congressional stuff, and I don't have time to do that, and I'm not going to. But again, you know, Duncan Hunter was going to lose. Well, Duncan Hunter's up by like 9 points. You know, and in some of these districts where they were going to lose, they're up by very, very, they're up. Or it's a similar case where the particular race is very close. Now, I want to say something about the New York Times Siena College poll. One of them just showed Jason Lewis, who is a second district incumbent and a first term congressman, down by 12 points in the second district in Minnesota. You know, I think that the very close toss up race in Minnesota is going to be the third district, where Eric Paulson is being challenged by Dean Phillips. And Dean Phillips is well financed. They're buying, they've got a lot of money coming in and buying lots of television and blah, 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 blah. The New York Times Siena College poll is this. If you go onto the New York Times site and you look at, they call this live polling. And what they do is they have college student volunteers who call registered voters. And it doesn't appear to be controlled by geography. So how can I explain this? If you have a two-county metropolitan area, and 60% of the public lives in County A, and 40% of the public lives in County B, and you do a poll and you only call into County B to find out if it's raining, and it's not raining over there, it's raining over in County A, guess what your poll's going to show? It's going to show that it's not raining in County A. But in fact, it is, right? So you have to balance the poll as it's being done and as it is reported by geography. So even in a congressional district, you can't just call the district where all of the Democrat registered voters are. That's the first thing. The second thing is, just because they're registered don't mean they vote. And just because they're Democrats don't mean they vote for the Democrat, especially in the second district or the third district or the eighth district, for that matter, which is a Democrat stronghold. So, and I'm talking about Minnesota. So it's, you got to watch out for the New York Times Siena College poll. The only saving grace for the New York Times Siena College poll is that it adds to the sample size every time they call. So in some of these districts, they've called 80,000 people or supposedly 20,000 people or whatever. But that doesn't mean that that overcomes the geographic issues. It doesn't mean that it overcomes the voter screen issues with registered voters staying home on election day. So you got to be careful with the New York Times Siena poll, because I find it hard to believe that a race that was won, a very close race that was won in 2016, is suddenly down by 12 points for a particular congressman. Now, I think the political scientists would say, well, the Democrats are running a boatload of television in that district, and that's why that looks that way. Couldn't tell you whether that's true or not. I do know that the Democrat donors have come in at the late date, and they've tried to take advantage of the whole Brett Kavanaugh thing by running a bunch of television. Well, they may have peaked it too early, and they may have figured that there wasn't going to be a confirmation vote as soon as it was. And so now we've got 3 weeks left in the race, so it may actually taper off in terms of its quote-unquote value, which I can't tell you if it is valuable, because we're not talking to the people who are going to vote, because we can't until they actually vote. So when it comes to conventional wisdom, when it comes to these predictions, be very careful. I'm telling you, I told people 3 weeks before the presidential election, Trump can win. Don't believe the hype. Hillary Clinton could win too. And people still come up to me and say, well, you know, those guys all said, no, the polls did not say that. And the polls don't say there's a Democrat wave here either. It says there are a number of close races. And frankly, it can go either way. Now, on election night, if we sit here and see a bunch of races turn blue and see a bunch of new congressmen and senators being sent to Washington because they voted Democrat, well, then it'll be a Democrat wave. Until then, it's unpredictable because you have so many factors in this. And I just, this whole Brett Kavanaugh thing has been the most ridiculous nonsense that I have ever seen. And I don't think that there's anybody in this that comes out, ahead of the game smelling like a rose, except Kavanaugh, who's now on the court. It was all done for show. I don't know whether the Republicans nominated him knowing this or whether the Democrats decided to make an issue out of it. I don't really care. I'm not interested in blaming anyone. The election's going to show what the election shows, and it isn't going to be because some Republican got Democrats to vote for him. It's going to be because Republicans went out and voted for Republicans and Democrats went out in large numbers to vote for Democrats. And if they cancel each other out, well, then it's going to come down to raw numbers. It's not districts. It's not, we see a movement in this country toward this kind of thinking or that kind of thinking. You can't possibly know that. If this group of people goes out and votes, then you're going to get a result in line with the people who actually voted. Nobody can predict who's going to vote what way. They just can't. And, you can get lucky. You can say, Douglas, whatever the guy's cartoonist, he said Trump could win. I said Trump could win months before he did. Nobody remembers me saying that because I'm not a famous cartoonist. Oh, well, Trump could win. It was obvious that Trump could win if he looked at the early polls. Didn't mean that he was going to, didn't mean that she was going to. And it's just, we are just inundated with terrible information on elections. So here's the bottom line. If it's important to you, go vote. I don't care who you vote for. Just go vote. If not, if you don't care, then please don't vote. In fact, maybe we'd be better off if people didn't vote, right? I don't believe that there's any honor among thieves. I think the entire government is corrupt on a grand scale. I think they are screwing the American people. And I think in the long run, we are going to have huge problems because of their failure to address specific problems. There's still a lot of economic problems. Nobody's talking about it. There are a ton of other kinds of problems, productivity problems, all sorts of issues that nobody's addressing in this country. And they have left the American people to attack each other because they're so emotional and upset about every little thing because they are not providing leadership. Now, they got a million excuses for why they can't. I don't care. I don't like any of them, and I don't like the federal government in particular. I'm very unimpressed with the state legislatures and governors and state legislators in particular most of the time. So I have a very skeptical view of government in general. I'm not campaigning for Republicans. I'm not campaigning for Democrats. I can't stand either one of them. So there you go. Real quick, I just read a story that the tariffs that the president is putting out is causing all sorts of distortions in the economic numbers as companies rush to either buy products from overseas without paying the tariff before the tariffs go into effect or bringing manufacturing back in-house or back to the United States. And so a lot of companies that have brought their manufacturing back into their own companies in-house are starting to say, why do we do this? And they are looking for American manufacturing companies. Let me recommend DepoStar, American Design, Engineering, and Manufacturing. They do a great job. Visit their website at DepoStar.com. Thanks for listening to the Bob Davis Podcast on Stitcher.com, iTunes, TuneIn, Google Play, the Google Podcast app, Podbean. I'm all over the place. And Spreaker as well. Appreciate the likes and the shares and the favoriting and following on Facebook and Twitter. The sharing is really important. So if you see a post that you like and you want to share it, please do. And also, I do appreciate the donations for Mobile Podcast Command at thebobdavispodcast.com. Thanks for listening to Podcast 764. I went on a little bit longer than I intended to, but that's okay. Yes, I
I want someone who likes the champagne I like. My A, I like someone to talk me off the bridge any day or night. She teach me how to live, she ain't afraid of life. Not easily impressed with the rich and famous life, cause she done been there and heard all the rumors before. She love art, she ride out with me on my music tour. She like the herbs, natural medicine, she cooking good. She tell me everything is cool when they ain't looking good. For real, the world's so ill. Yo, I want a girl so real, who not after material wealth but get dope still. Or maybe an educator, a lady with etiquette, who could be from out the hood or either work for the president, as long as there's no selfishness. Yes, as long as her love for the people is deep rooted and evident, you could be easily recruited. You have a sin. Your smile put me at ease. You the woman I need, but where is she?
Where is he?